Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary have been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something, well, fundamental, happiness. Or rather, why we seem so bad at finding it.
Right. We spend our lives, you know, chasing goals, the job, the house, the relationship. Absolutely convinced this time this thing will finally deliver that lasting happiness.
But it often doesn't work out quite like we planned, does it? The science actually shows we're consistently wrong about what will make us happy.
Exactly. It's this huge puzzle. And that's why today we're getting into Daniel Gilbert's fantastic book, Stumbling on Happiness. It really digs into the why behind this prediction failure.
So our goal here is to unpack that why for you. Gilbert's core argument is pretty revolutionary. This isn't about you personally failing. It's about how our brains are fundamentally wired.
Understanding these built-in cognitive quirks, these limitations, is actually quite liberating. It takes the pressure off needing to make that mythical, perfect choice all the time.
Okay, so who is this guide, Daniel Gilbert?
Well, he's the Edgar Pierce Professor of Psychology at Harvard University, and he's basically the leading expert in a field called affective forecasting.
Affective forecasting. Sounds a bit academic.
It does, yeah. But it just means predicting our future feelings. How happy will this make me? How sad will that make me? That kind of thing.
And what makes Gilbert's take on this so special? Because there are tons of books about happiness out there.
True, but Gilbert isn't a self-help guru offering quick fixes. He's a scientist, an empirical scientist. Mm. He spent decades in the lab doing rigorous experiments, cross-cultural studies.
So it's based on actual data. Not just anecdotes or wishful thinking.
Precisely. He maps out the specific, systematic ways our minds lead us astray when we try to imagine the future. And he does it with this really accessible, often funny, witty style. It's science, but it reads beautifully.
He's giving us an evidence-based look at the quirks and limitations of our own minds when we try to predict happiness.
Exactly, which is incredibly useful information to have.
So let's get to the heart of the book, the main argument in Stumbling on Happiness. What's the big idea?
It sounds almost too simple at first. Gilbert argues that we're just fundamentally, systematically bad at predicting what will make us happy or unhappy in the future.
And crucially, we're really confident that we are good at it. That confidence is misplaced.
Massively misplaced. And the problem isn't just random errors. He identifies three main cognitive mechanisms, three systematic ways our brains kind of trick us about future happiness.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is a failure of realism. Our imagination, when picturing the future, just doesn't fill in all the details accurately. It gets the big picture, maybe, but misses crucial context.
Right, focuses on the exciting bits and leaves out the mundane stuff.
Exactly. The second mechanism is presentism. Basically, we're stuck in the now. How we feel right now, emotionally, physically, heavily biases or contaminates our predictions about how we'll feel later.
So if I'm feeling down today, I'll predict future events will make me less happy than they might actually.
Pretty much, yeah. We can't easily step outside our current state. And the third one, which is maybe the most counterintuitive, it's the failure to account for rationalization. We underestimate our own amazing unconscious ability to adapt, to cope, and to kind of manufacture happiness after the fact, even when things don't go our way.
So the book maps out these three big stumbling blocks, realism, presentism, rationalization, to show why we mispredict.
Yes. And understanding that process is the key. It's a scientific exploration, not a self-help manual, but it has huge implications for how we make decisions.
Okay, let's dig into those mechanisms a bit more. You mentioned presentism being stuck in the now. How does that play out? Gilbert talks about prospection, right?
Yeah. Prospection is our unique human superpower, the ability to think about the future, to do that mental time travel. It drives almost all our major life choices.
But it's flawed.
Deeply flawed by presentism. Our brain uses today's feelings and sensations as the main input for simulating tomorrow's feelings. It's the easiest data to grab.
Like deciding on a lifelong career path right after a really stressful exam week, maybe?
Exactly. Or the classic example he uses, grocery shopping when you're starving.
Oh yeah, I do that. You buy everything in sight.
Right. Because your current hunger completely hijacks your prediction of your future appetite. You know, intellectually, you won't be this hungry tomorrow. But your present state just overrides that knowledge. Your cart fills up.
Okay, so our current feelings mess up our predictions. What about the imagination problem, realism? How does that work?
Gilbert calls this the problem of our imagination, filling in details, but also leaving out crucial ones. think about imagining a fancy dinner out.
Okay, I'm picturing great food, nice ambiance.
Right. Vivid details. But your imagination probably leaves out the hassle of getting there, the traffic, maybe the table next to you is really loud, the uncomfortable chair, or just the sheer cost when the bill arrives.
Yeah, it skips the boring or annoying bits.
Precisely. Our mental simulations feel complete, they feel real, but they often omit these mundane, everyday frictions that actually have a huge impact on our actual emotional experience day to day. The simulation is too clean.
So presentism colors the lens, and realism draws an incomplete picture. What about the third one, rationalization? This sounds like the most intriguing one.
It really is. This is where Gilbert introduces his concept of the psychological immune system.
Immune system, like for fighting off bad feelings.
Sort of, yeah. It's this non-conscious cognitive machinery that kicks in automatically to help us cope with negative stuff. Job loss, breakups, failures, anything that threatens our sense of well-being.
How does it work?
It helps us reframe things, rationalize, find the silver lining. It reinterprets experiences in a more positive light so we can maintain equilibrium. You know, if you don't get that dream job,
you convince yourself it wasn't the right fit anyway, or it would have been too stressful.
Exactly. And you genuinely come to believe it. Your immune system synthesizes that feeling of okayness.
Okay, but where's the prediction error? That sounds like a good thing.
It is a good thing for coping. But here's the paradox. Because this immune system operates unconsciously, below our awareness, we fail to account for it when we predict the future.
So we predict that a future negative event will devastate us.
Right. We predict we'll be utterly miserable for ages because we don't factor in this powerful automatic coping mechanism that will inevitably cushion the blow and help us rationalize. We forget how resilient we actually are.
And this leads to something called the impact bias.
Yes, precisely. The impact bias is our tendency to consistently overestimate both the intensity and the duration of our future emotional reactions to both good and bad events.
So we think winning the lottery will make us ecstatic forever, and a terrible accident will ruin our lives forever.
Exactly. But the research Gilbert cites, especially the famous studies comparing lottery winners and people who became paraplegic.
What did they find? I'm guessing the reality was different.
Hugely different from predictions. After an initial adjustment period, the long-term reported happiness levels of lottery winners, accident victims, and control groups were much, much closer than anyone expected.
Wow. So these massive life changes didn't permanently reset their happiness baseline nearly as much as we'd imagine.
Not nearly as much. Our psychological immune system helps us adapt, both upwards and downwards, more effectively than we give ourselves credit for. We are incredibly adaptive creatures.
Okay, so imagination is flawed by presentism and realism, and we fail to predict our own adaptation because of the unconscious immune system. Surely we can trust our memories of past happiness, right?
Ah, you'd think so. But Gilbert argues memory is also a surprisingly unreliable guide. This brings us to the problem he calls corrigibility, our inability to easily correct our prediction errors based on past experience.
Why? How does memory fail us here?
Because of things like the peak-end rule. We don't remember experiences like a video recording playing back every moment.
How do we remember them then?
We tend to reconstruct memories based heavily on two things. The most emotionally intense moment, the peak, and how the experience ended, the end. The actual duration or the average feeling often gets lost.
So a long, mostly okay vacation could be remembered as amazing if it ended with one spectacular day.
Exactly. Or a great trip could be remembered negatively if the last day involved a nightmare travel delay. The peak and the end disproportionately color the whole memory.
And if our memory of what actually made us happy or unhappy in the past is skewed like this,
then using that memory to plan future happiness is also going to be flawed. We might end up chasing intense peak moments even if the overall experience surrounding them isn't that great, because that's what memory highlights.
Okay, this is sounding bleak. If imagination is flawed and memory is flawed and we don't account for our own resilience, what's left? How should we predict future happiness?
Well, this is where Gilbert offers a really interesting, almost radical solution, he says. Stop trying to rely so much on your own flawed internal simulations and memories. Use surrogation.
Surrogation? What's that?
It means using other people's actual reported experiences as a better guide for your own future feelings. Find someone who is already experiencing what you're considering and see how they feel about it.
So instead of imagining how I will feel moving to Alaska, I should find people who actually moved to Alaska and ask them about their average Tuesday.
Pretty much, yes. Their real-world average experience is likely a much better predictor for your future happiness than your own imagination, which is prone to all those biases we talked about. Defer to the crowd's data.
That really shifts the focus outwards, doesn't it? Which leads us nicely into the key themes emerging from the book. The first one seems to be this constant underestimation of our own adaptability.
Absolutely. The adaptation blind spot. We just don't realize how good we are at getting used to things, both good and bad. Winning the lottery feels amazing at first, but then it becomes the new normal. A disability is devastating initially, but people adapt and find new sources of joy.
And the reflection there is pretty profound, isn't it? It means we maybe don't need those huge external achievements or perfect circumstances to be happy nearly as much as our culture tells us we do.
Right. We have this built-in engine for finding contentment, which connects the second huge theme. Synthetic happiness is real.
Synthetic happiness. That sounds fake.
That's what we instinctively think. But Gilbert's point is that the happiness we manufacture internally using our psychological immune system, the happiness we find when we rationalize and make peace with a situation we're stuck with, is just as genuine, just as lasting, and feels just the same subjectively as natural happiness.
Natural happiness being getting exactly what you wanted.
Yes. And he showed this brilliantly with that Harvard photography student study. Remember that one?
Vaguely. They had to choose a photo.
Right. They took a photography class, printed two favorite photos. One group got to choose one to keep, but their choice was final. The other group could choose one, but had the option to swap it for the other photo later.
Okay, so one group had freedom, one had commitment.
Exactly. And guess who ended up liking their chosen photograph more in the long run?
Let me guess. The ones who were stuck with their choice.
You got it. The group whose choice was final, whose psychological immune system had to kick in and say, okay, this is the one, let's find all the reasons why it's great, they synthesized more happiness with their photo. The group with the option kept wondering what if and liked their choice less.
So being stuck can actually lead to more contentment than having endless options. Mm-hmm. That really goes against the grain.
It does. It suggests commitment rather than constant choice might be a key ingredient for happiness because it lets that immune system do its work. It frees us from chasing external goals constantly.
Okay, but if surrogation learning from others is such a good strategy, why don't we use it more often? Mm-hmm. Why do we insist on trusting our flawed imagination?
Theme number three, the uniqueness illusion. We all tend to believe deep down that we're special. More unique, more complex than the average person.
For other people might feel that way, but I'm different.
Exactly that feeling. We think our own emotional reactions will somehow defy the statistical average. So we dismiss the experiences of others, the most reliable data source, in favor of our own biased internal simulations.
So a bit of humility might be more useful than intense introspection when trying to make decisions about future happiness.
Gilbert certainly suggests so. Comparing yourself to the average experience of others might be a smarter bet.
Gilbert really has a knack for summing these ideas up. You mentioned his writing style. Are there any particular lines or quotes that really stand out?
Oh, definitely. One I love captures that irony of how hard we work for a future self we don't really understand. We treat our future selves as though they were our children, spending most of the hours of most of our days constructing tomorrows that we hope will make them happy.
That hits home. We mean well, but we're operating with faulty instructions.
Pretty much. Another powerful one is about that psychological immune system. We are immune to reality.
Immune to reality, wow.
Yeah, meaning we actively reinterpret and rationalize what happens to maintain our well-being, even if it means we don't always learn accurately from our mistakes or see things completely objectively.
And there was one about memory, too. How our expectations shape what we even perceive.
Yes, this one's great. The brain and the eye may have a contractual relationship in which the brain has agreed to believe what the eye sees, but in return, the eye has agreed to look for what the brain wants.
So we literally see what we expect to see or want to see, which then feeds back into our flawed memories and predictions. It's a closed loop.
It often is, yeah. Makes it hard to break out.
So how can we use these insights? What are the real-life applications here?
Well, the first practical tip comes straight from presentism. Watch your timing for big decisions.
Mine.
Don't make major life choices, financial, career, relationship commitments when you're in an extreme emotional or physical state. Tired, hungry, angry, stressed, even wildly euphoric.
Wait for equilibrium, because your current state is skewing your view of the future.
Exactly. Let the emotional dust settle before you commit. Second, When you are making choices, especially big purchases or career moves, really lean into surrogation.
Talk to people already doing it.
Yes, but don't just ask, are you happy? Or focus on the highlights. Ask about the average day, the boring stuff, the frustrations, the mundane reality. That's the data your imagination conveniently ignores, but which actually shakes long-term contentment.
Focus on the daily grind, not just the Instagram picture.
You got it. And finally, related to synthetic happiness, embrace commitment.
Close the door on options.
Where possible and appropriate, yes. Constantly keeping options open, dwelling on what-ifs, can actually prevent your psychological immune system from fully engaging and synthesizing happiness with the choice you did make. Making a choice final often allows you to find more peace with it.
That's really powerful advice. Thinking back on this whole discussion, what's the biggest thing you're taking away?
For me, honestly, it's the sense of liberation. Knowing that my predictions about my own future happiness are likely to be pretty flawed, it takes so much pressure off.
Pressure to make the perfect choice.
Exactly, because the book shows we're far more resilient and adaptable than we think. We'll likely cope and find contentment even if things don't go exactly according to our flawed plan.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, the key shift is moving away from just trusting my own gut or imagination, which feels so intuitive, and instead learning to value surrogation.
Looking at the experiences of others.
Right. Realizing that the collective, average experience of other humans might actually be the best roadmap I have for predicting my own future feelings. It requires a bit more humility, maybe.
Definitely. And perhaps the final thought to leave everyone with, which is really Gilbert's underlying message. Maybe this whole stumbling towards happiness isn't a bug in our system.
What do you mean?
Maybe it's a feature. Maybe the fact that the future is uncertain, that we can't perfectly predict our feelings, is what keeps us motivated, optimistic, striving, and ultimately adaptable in a world that's constantly changing. The uncertainty allows for hope.
Mm. Stumbling is a feature, not a bug. That's definitely something to chew on. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.